We're talking about the five operas in this season of the Santa Fe Opera, and our guest today is Desiree Mays, international opera lecturer and storyteller, and author of the book Opera Unveiled, now in its 16th year. She speaks every night at the Preview Buffet at the Opera. Welcome, Desiree, to the Radio Café.
Hello, Mary Charlotte. It's good to be back.
We're talking today about the opera Fidelio by Ludwig von Beethoven. And Beethoven isn't really known for opera.
No, he only wrote one, but it's probably one of the greatest of all time. He only needed to write one.
Yeah.
He would have liked to have written more, it turns out, but it wasn't to be. And the way he came to this was sort of a little odd as well.
How did he come to this?
Well, he was in the middle of writing his great symphonies, and there was a little story about a woman who had gone in disguise to a prison to try and save her husband, who is a political prisoner. This whole opera is about political prisoners and how wrong that is. I mean, this is also how our production in Santa Fe this summer is showing what that whole situation is about. So Beethoven decided this would be an interesting topic for an opera. He believed in marriage, this man, and this man never married. It was a tragedy. He had a number of relationships. He fell totally in love once with a woman who we don't really know who she is, and he wrote her a letter to my immortal beloved.
And that letter survives.
It does. It did. But he never sent it. It was in a drawer in his desk when he died. They never found out. It was never sent to the woman. She never received it.
And we think she was a married woman.
Yes. Now research has shown she was married. They've given her a name. She was married to a merchant in Frankfurt and apparently loved Beethoven also. But she, in those days, no woman ever left her marriage and kids, husband, regardless of what happened. They had affairs on the side, but they didn't leave the marriage, and she chose not to. And he was heartbroken. He had so many difficulties in his life. He had been a phenomenally successful composer and a musician, and now he wants to turn to opera. And this is to be the theme. It's also written in the genre of a rescue opera. Now, this made for all sorts of problems, but let me first explain what a rescue opera was. We're talking now about the years of the French Revolution, and most of the most popular operas of that time were rescue operas, where people went in to save people from the guillotine. So Beethoven looked to these rescue operas to see how this would work for him. This young woman is going into the prison, disguised as a prison guard, to try and save her husband if he's in the prison. So it's a rescue opera in one sense. It's actually a lot more. But he studied other composers to see how they did it and started. He wrote something hundreds of pages of music before ever attempting to put down the music for his opera. The other aspect of this opera that made life very difficult for Beethoven was the political situation at the time. As a young man, he had been a fan of Napoleon's, the young general who was coming up the ranks. But now, by this time, he's beginning to be disillusioned. In fact, the Eroica Symphony was to have been dedicated to Napoleon. But when Napoleon started marauding and marching all over Europe, he took him off the title page and just left it as the Eroica. At this point, the time of writing Fidelio, or Leonore, as it first was called, it turns out the French forces took Salzburg and Vienna. And during the week of the premiere of the opera, most of the aristocrats had fled, terrified for their lives, and that what had happened in Paris in the French Revolution could happen in their beloved Vienna. So this was a terrible time to put on an opera. In addition to that, there were three versions of this opera. In 1805, when this happened, the opera appeared. There was no one there. It didn't do very well. He changed it somewhat and tried the following year. It still flopped. I mean, can you believe anything by Beethoven flopped? He was deeply upset about this, and he sort of put the whole opera aside. And it wasn't until 1813 that some singers came to him and said, why don't you bring bring Fidelio, bring Leonore, as it was called, back to life, because now the French have left Vienna and we can do our own rescue opera. We have been rescued from the French, and suddenly it became appropriate. So he got a new librettist. They cut swathes out of the score. They changed a number of things, and the opera changed its name from Leonore, which is the name of the wife, to Fidelio, which is the opera we know and we'll see this summer.
Well, of all those versions, do they all still exist?
Yes, they do. In fact, I have a lovely recording where both are included. CD 1 and 2 is Leonore, and 3 and 4 is Fidelio, which is fascinating to look at and to do the cross comparisons of what stayed in and what did not.
Is there one that's most often performed?
Yes, the Fidelio is the one. The 1814 version is the one that's most often performed. But if anyone ever has a chance to see the other one, I would encourage it, because it's a beautiful piece. The recording I should mention here we're using is 1989 on Deutsche Grammophon, the Vienna Philharmonic, with the great Leonard Bernstein conducting. Pizarro is Hans Soten, Florestan René Collo, Leonore/Fidelio. And I use the name into changeably. Leonore is the wife who disguises herself as a prison guard, Fidelio.
Named Fidelio.
Yeah, Gundula Janowitz, and Rocco is Manfred Jungwirth. So there were all sorts of challenges in putting this one great opera together. And the last one I should mention, perhaps, is one that we ran into a little bit with Carmen when the Opéra Comique wanted light opera. This production was to be presented in the Theater an dem Wien, which again was a family house. They didn't really want drama. They expected domestic comedy. So here is Beethoven, the great Beethoven, expected to write domestic comedy. So he actually starts the opera out that way. There's also dialogue in this opera, as in Carmen, because this was required at this theater. So between some of the musical sections, there is dialogue, which we may hear a little this morning. But let's start maybe jump in now and hear some music. It's probably time we heard a little of this. With the great quartet that comes near the very beginning of the opera. There are four characters here. We meet, first of all, Marceline, who is a young woman. She's a soprano with a bright voice, a sort of a soubrette. She perfectly fits this domestic comedy style. She is trying to escape the advances of Giacchino, who is the prison porter. The setting is serious enough. It's in a prison. It's a prison setting. She is the jailer's daughter, Marceline, who is being pursued by Giacchino, the prison porter, a young man who's fallen in love with her. And then we meet in this quartet Rocco. Rocco, who is he's a good man. And you have to ask, why is he a jailer in this terrible prison of political prisoners? He does his job, but when he's pushed too far, he will take a stand. And then the final character is Fidelio. And the problem in this quartet is that Marceline has fallen in love with Fidelio, who she doesn't know is a woman. Not knowing it's a woman. So in the quartet, you have this confusion. She is happy to see Fidelio. Giacchino is wondering why she doesn't respond to him. Rocco is watching these young people, thinking they're all going to end up very happily. And Fidelio is confused. He had not planned that the jailer's daughter would fall in love with him. Now, the music that Beethoven uses to describe this quartet and the feelings of these four different people and where they're coming from is a canon, which is not what you'd expect. That's a piece of music where one voice starts, the next one picks up with the same music, and then the third and the fourth, and so on through the piece. So typically you'd expect they'd sing about the same thing. But in this, all four are expressing different emotions. That's part of the genius of Beethoven. And here it's the first intimation, too, that this is not just a domestic comedy. We're headed in an entirely different direction. So let's hear the quartet first. Thank you. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, music of Fidelio by Beethoven. And it's interesting, there are many people, including singers themselves, who talk about how challenging this opera is from the perspective of the opera singer. Yeah.
Yes, it's not easy. And of course, it'll be sung in German, but that's sort of required now that all singers can sing in German, French, and Italian, as well as English. But beyond that, musically, it's very challenging. These are not easy roles. For instance, Florestan, when we finally meet him in his dungeon near death, has to have a really heroic sound. This man needs a sound that's greater than any one tenor voice. And there are, of course, many different kinds of tenors, but here you need a heroic tenor who can handle that. And we have the wonderful Paul Groves, who has been here a number of times. It's actually his first time singing Florestan here at Santa Fe, so that would be interesting. The bass baritone is Greer Grimsley, who is, in my view, the greatest Wotan that we have on Earth at present. That's the lead role in Wagner's Ring Cycle. This is a character, the governor of the prison, who is totally evil, and that evilness has to be in the voice. It's a very demanding piece because, again, you have to be able to act. There's as much acting as singing going on in this, and Greer Grimsley really is spectacular in this role. The Leonora is another challenge because this is a woman singing disguised as a young man through most of the opera. And she's playing it on many levels because nobody at the prison must know who she is. And she keeps hoping every time she sees a prisoner that it will be her husband. And when she does finally find him near death, she's with Rocco, the jailer, and she can't let him know that she has recognized her husband because she's supposed to be digging his grave, as it turns out at that point. And in the production here, we have the, again, incredible Alex Pender, whose real name is Alexandrina Penderchanska. You can see why she chopped it off. So Alex Pender, and Greer Grimsley told me, he said, she's an absolute tiger in this role because it's very demanding. And the director's done a lovely thing with her aria. There's one aria that Leonor has on her own. And in this production by the great Stephen Wadsworth, who is the director, he has her set apart. She's changing out of her jailer clothes, and she stands for a moment in a little slip in her underwear, and she sings of her hopes and her dreams and her vulnerability. And she becomes a woman for us at this point. So we see many sides of this character. And vocally, it's very demanding. You know, she's Fidelio, she's Leonor, and then she's reunited with her husband in this ecstatic duet.
It is said that Beethoven wrote so much more for instruments than for voices that he kind of expects people's voices to behave in any way that he wants at any given moment.
Yeah, he treated voices as if they were instruments.
Yeah.
But I think we have to remember there were extenuating circumstances that Beethoven was deaf. In 1802, deafness struck. In 1803, he started writing this opera. Can you imagine?
I cannot. It's very, very hard to imagine. I mean, what a tragic life this person led. He was unlucky in love, loved a married woman, was
That's
a great
right.
composer, one of the greatest composers in the history of the galaxy, and he's deaf.
That's right. And he wrote about this. He wrote in a statement to his brothers that was not to be opened until after his death, why everyone thought him so bad-tempered. But he said, it's been so hard for me. He was on a walk in the Vienna woods with a musician who said, listen to the beautiful sound of the shepherd's pipe. And he said, I could not hear it. Mm. And here he is writing an opera, his first opera, so he doesn't have that opportunity to work with singers. It's very challenging, but it is an extraordinary piece. It goes from domestic comedy to high drama and heroism, and the whole issue of the injustice of political prisoners who are held then and now.
And once again, I think I've said this 7 million times already, but these are all universal themes that never get old.
That's right. The relevance is shocking in this one. And Stephen Wadsworth, who's a very insightful director, he spends a lot of time with his singers, really getting them into these roles. And this will be presented in a sort of a contemporary context that we'll all instantly recognize and be shocked by. I think it's easy not to be shocked by something that happened in the time of Napoleon in Vienna. But you can be shocked now. I mean, if we were suddenly faced with the two 200 schoolgirls who have just been kidnapped in Africa on a stage, we'd get it.
Or Guantanamo or...
Any of those. Guantanamo, of course, is the classic. We are not setting it in Guantanamo. But the connection is there. And that's what this opera is about. And again, Beethoven was only interested in the victory of good over evil. So you have to plow through all this evil to get there. I thought maybe at this point, talking about this, and Pizarro, the governor of the prison, he has, a couple of years earlier, he had gotten in an argument with a political character, a young man who was very honest, and he criticized Pizarro for his corruption, and because Pizarro had him seized and thrown in prison. And this, of course, is Florestan, Leonor's husband, but she doesn't know this. So he's in the prison. Pizarro has total control. He's ordered that this prisoner never be allowed out of his cell, that they take his bedding away. He has bare bread and water to survive. He's being very harsh. And now he has come to the prison, the governor, Pizarro, because he's a little nervous. The minister has got wind of the fact that there are people being held in the prison illegally, and he is planning to come to the prison to sort things out and see what's going on. And Pizarro gets there before him, fully intending to kill Florestan before the minister arrives, and he gives Rocco the instructions. He says, I'm going to see the prisoner, but if the minister's carriage is seen, make sure the trumpets blow from the tower so I'm warned, and then he can dispose of Florestan and come out squeaky clean, he hopes. Doesn't happen. Now listen to the music in this excerpt, whereas it's been beautifully flowing in that lovely quartet we just heard. Now it's choppy, it's uneven, it's unsettling as we hear the music. With all of these music excerpts, listen to the music under the voice. This is Beethoven, and it tells its own story beyond the voice. Here you'll hear the evilness, the discord of Pizarro in this little excerpt. Thank you.
Gestreckt zu sein. Nun ist es mir geworden, den Mörder selbst zu dulden. Nun ist es mir geworden, den Mörder selbst zu dulden. Den Mörder selbst zu dulden.
So, we're listening to music from Fidelio by Ludwig von Beethoven. And there was the evil that we heard in the voice.
That's the bad character, yes. Yeah. The little leftover from the melodrama. And it could be played that way, but this, I promise you, is going to be treated very seriously with a social message for all of us, I think, who go to this opera. And the responsibility we have to know about these things and maybe to act on them. I think that's where the director is coming from in this production. So Pizarro has given Rocco, the jailer, his instructions that this man is going to be killed and he'll be down. And would Rocco go down into the dungeon and prepare a grave? And this is the plan. And Fidelio / Leonor begs Rocco to be allowed to accompany him because she senses this could be her husband. It's 2 years since this imprisonment. But before that happens, she turns to Leonor, says to Rocco, why don't you let the prisoners out of their cells to have a little breath of fresh air? It's a marvelous prefiguring of what happens at the end when the prisoners come out from the dark into the light, which is how the opera ends. And in this production, it's staggering because there's a grate in the ground and the prisoners literally come out of the darkness from under the earth into the light of day, and they sing this amazing chorus, which is not what you expect at the end of any act in any opera. We should hear a little of that, the prisoner chorus from the end of Act One of Fidelio.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the prisoners' chorus from the end of the first act of Beethoven's Fidelio. They come out into the light, and then they gradually go back down to their cells. So there's that sadness of that moment of coming into the light but having to go back. And, of course, this includes our wonderful chorus.
And the choral scenes in the opera are so amazing, not just this opera, but any those massive scenes with so many voices on stage. It's just, they're so beautiful and they blend so well. And it's also a time when the apprentices at the opera really have a chance to shine.
To come to the fore. Yes, they fulfill many roles, the apprentices. This is a unique program and probably the top leading program for young apprentice singers. If they come to Santa Fe and that's on their resume, that's very good. They come in not really as chorus. They don't like to be thought of that way, but they do fulfill those roles. They also cover for the principals. So Carmen may be covered by one of these young women, and invariably one, two, or three get to sing those roles in the course of the season.
And it's a huge career break when they
It's a huge break, and many of our apprentice singers, Joyce DiDonato started this way. You know, she started as an apprentice singer, and look at her now, the great leading lady of the Met in every international house on earth.
For example, Jennifer Forney, who was an apprentice several years ago and ended up singing a leading role in Falstaff, recently sang Madam Butterfly in California.
You see, it's incredible. This house has been a great jumping off point for these young singers, mainly because the people who choose them, something like 1,000 young singers audition for this program. They're not quite students. They're near the end of their training. They've been out on the road. They've been singing. But nearly 1,000 apply for roughly 40 positions, which is staggering. And they do very well. So they will sing the small roles, they sing the chorus parts, and they will cover for the principals. And they stay, of course, in the community here. The opera has a housing program, and everybody is put up and taken care of. It becomes one big family, Marisol. It's really great being up there.
Yeah.
The hard part for the apprentices in that they try to use as many apprentices as possible in as many operas, and trying to juggle that with rehearsals is nearly impossible. Possible when they're supposed to be in three places at once. But that's all, you know, logistically worked out, and it's miraculous how it falls into place.
And they also do concerts, and there are some apprentices where they do scenes from operas, and we encourage everybody to check the SantaFeOpera.org website and see when those are, because there's still time to get your tickets and go.
Yes, those are two Sundays during the season, and they're absolutely the high point of the apprentices' summer, of course, because they then get to play leading roles. They take sections of acts, and the acts are produced by the real directors and with the real conductors and the costume designers. They're working with the professional teams on an extraordinary level. So that's something to see, because you can see a number of short scenes of operas with the stars of the future, as it were. We have many of them coming back in this summer, the young singers singing leading roles. So here you'll hear them in the prisoner chorus. And of course, the end of this opera, which was, in a way, a preparatory scene for Beethoven's incredible Ninth Symphony, came out of what you hear at the end of Fidelio.
We're talking about the opera Fidelio with Desiree Mays. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe. And we're back with Desiree Mays, author of Opera Unveiled, talking about the opera Fidelio by Beethoven. And we've just gotten through Act One. So what happens next? I mean, this is actually an opera with horrifying themes, but a happy ending.
With teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yes, by the skin of their teeth is a happy ending. And it can be melodramatic. I mean, you can see it in those terms with a very serious message underneath. Well, now in Act Two, all pretense at domestic comedy is completely over. It's, from here on, it's a very serious piece. And it starts in the prison cell of Florestan. This man who is hardly human, chained to a rock, is near death. When the door opens and Rocco comes down into the cell with his assistant Fidelio in order to dig the grave, as he's been ordered to by the governor Pizarro.
And nobody knows that Fidelio is actually the wife of this man
who is
near death.
She doesn't know that at this point either.
She doesn't even know that that's her husband in there.
She sees this man, the suffering man. She can't recognize him. He's in such bad shape. And she determines within herself, the strength of this woman is quite wonderful. She says, I don't care who he is. I'll do whatever I can to save him. And at the, she offers him a little bread and a little wine is forbidden, but she does. And as she hands it to him, she sees his eyes and she knows that it's her husband. And then she's completely trapped in her emotions because she's ecstatic to have found him. She's horrified at the condition that he's in. He's so near to death. And she cannot let Rocco know that she has recognized him. So all of that is playing in. You need an incredible actress at this point. And Florestan has no idea. He is so far out of it. We should play a little of his aria. This was an aria that was first written by Beethoven for the first two operas. But when he redid it for the final Fidelio opera, he changed the ending. I'm going to play this little section. The prisoner is near death and he's bemoaning his faith, but he says that he wouldn't have it any other way, that he denounced this terrible man and he would do it again. And then he has a vision. He sees Leonora coming to rescue him in his delirious state. He calls her mein Engel. You'll hear that a number of times. Let's hear a little then of the end of Florestan's aria from the beginning of the second act.
Gotta love opera. This is how,
this
is how people sing when they're at death's door hallucinating.
That's right. He's also hallucinating wildly. He's out of his mind and he collapses, of course, at the end of it, mainly from the stress of having to sing this difficult aria. It's not easy. As he collapses, then the door opens and the dreaded governor comes in, throws off his great coat, and he said, "I am going to kill you." And they have this sort of little interaction, and Florestan says he calls him a murderer. And just as Pizarro is about to run him through with a sword, Fidelio Leonor leaps between the two men and she says, "First, you must kill his wife." And they're all stunned. You have this wonderful moment where everybody stops and says, "Leonor, you're here. What are you doing here, Leonor?" And
thought you were a dude.
Yeah, that's right. And Rocco says, "This is totally unacceptable. I'm about to marry this young man to my daughter," you know, because he thinks Fidelio is a boy. And all is revealed. Pizarro is not fazed. He says, "I'll kill you as well as him." And just as he's about to give the death blow, the trumpet is heard from the tower. the minister has arrived and the end is in sight. So it's that wonderful moment of theater. The whole thing builds up to this climax. Pizarro is about to kill the prisoner. Leonor is revealed to be the wife, and the minister arrives on the scene. So Pizarro gets out of there very fast, and the two, husband and wife, are reunited in the most ecstatic music in all opera, I think. The opening bars of this duet, where they realize they are reunited and that they will be saved, is quite extraordinary. Let's hear a little of that. So this is the moment we've all waited for.
Yes.
when right
liberation
conquers wrong.
Yeah.
That's right. And then Beethoven made another change with the final version of this opera for 1814, when the opera was then a phenomenal success.
Yeah.
Mainly because the French had left the city and the people were happy. They saw this as a rescue opera, that good was triumphing over evil. The French had gone. So it sort of tied in with the political scene at the time. But it became a phenomenally great opera on many, many levels. I mean, you can just go and enjoy it as a show, but you can look at those deeper levels and think about it too. So,
does it get performed a lot?
Yes, a lot. But again, it takes amazing singers. So you have to have a first-class orchestra and be able to cast a strong principals. And they're not always easily available, the right match to make this work. And it is the first time the Santa Fe Opera is doing Fidelio, surprisingly. So that was a surprise. So the very final scene then is where everything is resolved, actually, happily. The minister arrives in the prison grounds. Pizarro is there. The prisoners are brought in. He expresses that all men are brothers, and he's there to look into these cases and free those who should be free. And then Rocco tells of Fidelio, Leonor, and Florestan, how he had been imprisoned, and the truth is told. Pizarro is then banished, and the minister turns in a wonderful moment to Leonor and said, "You helped to rescue him. You should be the one to loosen his chains." And that, of course, then leads into this extraordinary finale to the opera, which Beethoven used Schiller's Ode to Joy. And this, of course, then carries forward into the Ninth Symphony, which was composed not long after this, remembering that this was written by a man who could not hear. He
Amazing.
Heard it all in his head.
Oh God.
And when he wrote that testament to his brothers, he actually said, he said, I would end it all. I would end this pain, this suffering, this being shut off. The opening line of Florestan's aria is, God, what darkness here. This is Beethoven talking about himself. He cannot hear what's going on around him. So he identifies totally, I think, with this prisoner. And he wrote in that letter that he felt he had been sent on earth to fulfill a purpose. And as long as he was to write this music, he would write all of it, and that he would not choose to take his life. But he was very misjudged in his life. People thought he was impossible because he must have been difficult to work with. But then he wouldn't be the first great artist who had been difficult to work with. So.
Well, and who had so many horrifying challenges and who kept at it. I mean,
with the most glorious music. I mean, listen to all of the music, the sections I've played today underneath the song of the singers. It's quite beautiful. So it's an amazing experience of theater. And I think in the Santa Fe Opera, in that outdoor setting, it's quite spectacular.
So are we going to hear a big finale?
Yes, we could play the very end here. And again, this is where the entire chorus joins in. Let's hear the very final moments of Fidelio. See that wonderful soft ending note, ta-da, at the end of this one. You go home thinking about this opera.
Right.
And even though it's happy is the word, it's an uplifting piece. This is a really good opera that gives you that sense of being really uplifted about, and with that there's hope. There's always hope. No matter how black things get, things work out in the end. And in this case, they do.
Sometimes.
Yes, yeah. But in this case, yes.
Now, you talked to Stephen Wadsworth, the director of this, and you quote him in your book Opera Unveiled, which, by the way, everybody should pick up before they go to the opera, because it's great to have the plots and some of the background and the sources and things like that before you see the show. But.
Yeah, Stephen Wadsworth is probably one of the foremost directors now, an American director. He directed the famous Seattle Ring that I took a number of people to last season, and talked to him about this, and he has a very specific way of seeing this. He said to me, and I'm quoting, "Art is disturbing. It is my job to bring the truth of the story home to audiences. The destination of the piece is horror and moral despair, which finds catharsis, liberation, and release in music from Beethoven that is beyond belief." That's how he describes Beethoven's music. Wadsworth wants audiences to experience the opera and its story in a very immediate way, which is what Beethoven himself intended. "He was not a softy, nor was he a romantic," Wadsworth states. "Beethoven is about absolutes. The issue of oppression and anger at being hemmed in for him was huge. on so many levels, of course. So this is where he's coming from, and we'll work with these marvelous artists. Greg Grimsley, who sings Pizarro, sang Votan for him in Seattle, in the Seattle Ring. And these are wonderful performers who have worked a number of times together before. I think it'll be interesting.
That is interesting when you've got people who've worked together before making it a really moving ensemble cast. I mean, the theater can become even more powerful.
Yeah, I saw that in one production. I'm trying to think where the production was recently, where the director walked out in the final week of rehearsals and the singers had to put it together at the very end. The whole thing could have been a total disaster, but because they were real professionals who've been singing a long time, who knew one another well, they were able to pull that thing together, and on the first night you wouldn't know. No, true, the last night was a lot better because by then they did have it together, but this is a challenge. There's a level of professionalism in this art form that a lot of people don't understand what's required. It was certainly with the older singers who've had longer careers. And this is one of the magical things for young singers, the apprentice singers who are on stage with these amazing people, learning the best possible way, just being on the same stage with them. If it's just in a chorus role, it's an amazing learning experience.
So we've been talking about Fidelio by Ludwig von Beethoven. Thank you so much for being with us, Desiree Mays, on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
And we want to talk about one more set of things, which is always very important, which is, for example, how to get to the opera. There are shuttle buses if you don't want to drive all the way up there.
That's right. A number of people have said over the years, you know, we'd love to go to the opera, but we're not up for driving home from the Santa Fe Opera to Albuquerque when we're in an altered state after the opera. And that makes perfect sense. So there are now shuttle buses that one can bring, come up, and you come in time, I think, for a prelude talk with before the performance, if you want to do that, and for the show, and then drive back. And there's a little commentary on the opera on board the bus by yours truly, so you hear little music on the way up. That's a fun way to go to the opera, and you can relax on the way home. Now, to get the details of where those pickup points are and to book or make a reservation, it's not too expensive. Call the box office at 986-5900 and they will make that reservation for you. It started out just for Albuquerque, but you can also do it from Santa Fe. A number of people pick up the buses. I think they pick up from the hotels in Santa Fe and bring you up for the show and then bring you home again. And you don't have to deal with the parking and getting out of the car park at the end of the show, something that's also going to be fixed in the expansion. They're expanding that car park.
Now, another thing for those who do drive up, if you want to drive up a few hours early, you can do the proverbial tailgate, which everybody does. Yeah. It's a big tradition. And I mean, the extent to which people go to make a really comfortable and civilized picnic out the back of their cars.
It's quite wonderful. Yeah, out of a truck, people have cut glass and candelabras and fabulous meals. I have friends who come out from El Paso who plan months in advance what the menu is going to be, and they bring up three or four different courses with matching wines. It's quite something. You better go to the opera that night because one's in no fit state to drive home. Hopefully one is for the opera, but people do that. They get all dressed up. And last year, for the first time, the opera instigated this new fun idea of a contest, that there would be famous people who would go around the car park and choose which was the best setup, you know, the tailgate picnic with all the dresses, the whole thing. And this year, it's going to be great fun because Javier Gonzalez, our mayor, is going to judge who is the best tailgate party.
Right.
And they'll get tickets to shows and all sorts of goodies. So it's fun to do that. You just show up and do it. Also, if you haven't time, if you're out of state or whatever, you just want to go and have the tailgate, that's fabulous. Without preparing a whole meal, you can buy a picnic supper there. They have a place at the opera you can buy, and you need to reserve that also. And then you don't even have to cook. You can sit and eat that food, bring your own bottle of wine, and watch those stunning sunsets. Or on the other hand, as has been known to happen, those horrendous storms that come in where everything blows away. And this is opening night is the night of the contest. The first night of the opera is the big night. But people do it throughout the season. I come in to work to give my talks at the cantina, and as people all over the car park partying, and, right. and it's a marvelous way to go to the opera. I mean, there's so much more here than the opera itself. The opera is the main purpose, but you can spend half a day. You know, you go up there, you see the sunset, a show, and it's a great night out.
And don't forget to check the weather before you go, because sometimes you can have a nice day, and then it gets really cold at night. And I've been known to bring fleece jackets up there and things like that. Now, do people dress up in fabulous dresses?
Yes. You can. The sky is the limit. I mean, people go overboard entirely for dress for these tailgates,
right.
and as they do,
and for the opera,
and for the opera. I mean, everyone can wear from jeans to tiaras to go to the opera here, and that's okay. Personally, if I know a storm is coming in, I wear my mountain boots under a very long skirt, and you know, bring layers. Always bring layers, because what can start out as 80 degrees can be cool at midnight. You know, it'll be cool. But if you're dressed appropriately, it doesn't get in the way.
Desiree Mays, thanks again for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks very much, Mary Charlotte.
We've been talking to Desiree Mays, international opera lecturer and storyteller, and author of the book Opera Unveiled. She speaks every night at the Preview Buffet at the Opera. The Santa Fe Opera is on the web at santafeopera.org. And the phone number is 800-280-4654. And the local number is 505-986-5900.